That's good. All right. Well, I had a couple thoughts this last week. Amazing, isn't it? And one of the thoughts was, why would the Lord have us meet together? You know, forsake not the assembling of yourselves together as the manner of some is. I mean, this day and age, most Christians think the church is a building. You know, it's a place. It's a local church. But the church is not, that's not the church he's talking about. He's talking about a body of believers worldwide. And all of those body of believers, each one of the believers has a separate part in it, a different function. And God gives each person the talents and the ability to do what he desires for them to do. And basically, it's for the edification of the saints. Now, you'd think to hear most preachers talking, church is a place for, it's an opportunity for you to do something for God. But that's not what it's really for. It's for the edification of the saints. It's for you to come and grow spiritually. That's what it's for. You'd think to hear preachers talk, you're here to serve the church. Well, that's not it. You're here to edify each other. Now, for most people, and I say most people, I mean, I'd hate to know what the real numbers are. But for most people, the most spiritual thing they do all week is come to church. And that's all they do. They don't open their Bible all week. They pray out of sense of duty. They don't pray with any heartfelt emotion. It's like, you know, leaving an answer, a message on an answer machine, you know. Well, God, if you ever get this thing, just, I just want you to know I appreciate this and appreciate that and appreciate the other stuff and heal so-and-so and help me out here. But when you get right down to it, this is the most spiritual thing anybody does these days. Come to church. What's that? Well, just sense of duty. You know, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. Well, if you're not different when you leave, then you've wasted your time. I mean, I hate to tell you that, but something ought to happen while you're here. You ought to be edified. You ought to grow a little bit. Anyway, so let's get back into our lesson. Last week we were talking about Matthew 5:16, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Now, you should have something that people can see, but their response shouldn't be to you. Now, like I said last week, I remember lots of times in the things that we were doing for the Lord, how they, oh man, you know, Brother so-and-so, he's such a faithful man. He just comes and he does this and he does, you can always count on him to do this. Where's the attention? They're not glorifying the Father which is in heaven. Well, I wonder if the guy, when he gets in the front of the judgment seat of Christ, that all of that stuff that he did just goes, woof. Well, he said, these things are proof. They're further proof that what you're doing is in the good, the acceptable, or perfect will of God. What is that? It's when other people, as a result of what you do, glorify God. Well, how many people are glorifying God these days? Think about it a minute. I mean, you stop and think and seriously consider how many people are actually glorifying God. Man, you're down to an infinitesimal, minuscule percentage of the people that we know in the churches that we know. When I say we, I'm talking about my wife and I and Brother Mark and probably a lot more of you. But when you get right down to it, there's all kinds of things that have just been left out of the ministry. And the number one thing is God. I mean, just left out. You say, that's not possible. Oh, yes, it is. Oh, yeah, it is. Now, if your light shining in the right direction, they're going to be impressed by God. That's what's going to happen. He didn't say, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and be grateful unto God. That's not the same thing. I mean, somebody gets up there and starts telling about all the good stuff that God did for them, you know, and somebody else gets thinking, yeah, God did all this stuff for me too. And their sense of gratitude, you know, kind of enhanced and, you know, they become thankful a little bit. But you remember that leper, when he was healed, he turned around with a loud voice and glorified God. Then he came close to the Lord, got on his knees, and with thanksgiving. Those two things aren't the same. We make all that stuff the same thing. You know, you say, do you love God? Well, yeah, I love God. Well, how do you know you love God? Well, look at all I've done for him. You love God, Martha? Well, of course I do. Look at all I'm doing for him, you know. That's not the way this thing's supposed to work. The attention's supposed to be back on him. Now, Paul says in 2 Timothy 4:5, it says, make full proof of thy ministry. I wonder how many preachers have ever thought about making full proof of their ministry. Well, I don't have to prove anything. I'm the preacher. I don't have to prove anything. I'm the pastor. I'm the teacher. You know, I'm the evangelist. I've been called into this work. Man, I heard about it. My mother told me about a preacher she had in her church. It was a woman preacher. And her justification was, well, if God didn't call me to preach, I'd give up right now. Well, there's the proof. As far as my mother was concerned, that was absolute proof. She'd been called to the ministry because that woman said, if he didn't call me to the ministry, I'd quit. Man, that ain't the kind of proof God's talking about. When he says, make full proof of thy ministry, he's talking about absolute, conclusive evidence. Something that's tangible, something that's undeniable, something that's irrefutable. What is that? Well, like I said before, the proof is where your light draws people's attention. I mean, every one of us has got some kind of light. Right? We do. Most of the time, you know, it's, man, look what I did. Give me that red jacket, man. How many did you have in your Sunday school class? Why are you asking? You had more than I did? How many are running in church? Why are you asking? Because you think you got more than I got? Now that's what's really, honestly, genuinely going on. And that's what's going on in the hearts of men today. Oh, they talk about God and they pray to God, you know, and they desire His help to help them in their ministry and in their church and all that stuff. But the proof of the ministry is not there. The proof of the ministry is, where's the attention? Is the attention on glorifying your Father which is in heaven? Is it on something that God did? Or is it something that you're stealing the credit for? Preachers want to be complimented because they're running more than they were last year. They got more saved this year than they did last year. They got more baptized. And they'll accept all the praise you give them. And if you don't think so, go out there and talk to some of them. I'm just being straightforward, blunt, honest.
See, that's what they were taught in school.
Well, that's exactly right. And it's all about what you do. Do more, do more, do more, do more. You're here, you know, to work. We need more workmen at the oars, not passengers in the boat. You know, pick your bucket up and start bailing. Do something for God. That's not why you're here. What you're here for is to be edified. You're here so that your attention can be drawn to your Creator in such a way that you actually begin to care about what He thinks. You don't care what He thinks. You don't. You care that He knows what you think. That's what you care about. And the greater your problem, the more intense the effort to get His attention and say, man, help us here, Lord. Carest thou not that we perish? If it's He that worketh in you both to will and do of His good pleasure, we're sure missing out on a lot of good lessons, aren't we? Why? Because we just look at it from our perspective. Well, that hurts. Well, quit messing up and I'll quit whooping you. Now, if God was whipping us for every time we did something wrong, how many times did you get whipped? You know what He says about that? He says He chastens us for our profit. What does that mean? That doesn't mean He's trying to correct you. You don't chasten a child for their profit. You chasten a child to get them to stop doing something that's bad. And most of the time, you want to stop them from doing stuff that irritates you. I mean, it's a selfish motive. It's not for the kid. It's for me. How many times do I have to tell you to quit doing that? Get that trash out. What's the matter with you, Dad? You so lazy you won't take it out? That's what's going on in your mind, you know. Stop and think about this thing. In the last days, perilous times shall come. Why? For men shall be lovers of their own selves. I want the recognition. I want to be seen of men. Men look on the outward appearance. I'm going to do everything I can to get the attention. If you want to know what's wrong with most of the churches today, it's real simple. I will not give my glory to another. So how come we're not getting more people saved? Because when I sent something to you, you took the credit for it. And then you turned around and flaunted it in front of that other Christian to make him feel bad. You didn't just take the credit. You used it against the other Christian to make him feel bad. No edification. That's a little counterproductive. Why should I do anything for you? Well, we're going to have to go back and look in the commentaries, and we're going to have to look in these preachers' helps to find more ways to increase the offering. How come? Because God's not touching the hearts of the people to give Himself. We've got to find another way to get it done. We need more people out here soul winning on Thursday nights. How are we going to do that? We've got to find a way to sell this program. And they are selling the programs. They're using every technique in the book that they can. And mostly what they're using is everybody wants to be somebody. Everybody wants to feel good about themselves and to be seen of men and to be complimented. Everybody wants somebody else to brag on something they did. Why? Because in the last days, men should be lovers of their own selves. I want to feel better about me. Don't you? What is that? That's that sinful nature you got. I mean, we get in front of God. You ever get real close to God? That's the last thing in your mind. The first thing in your mind is how great He is. And the second thing in your mind is what a rotten thing you are. That's the way it works. Anyway, the proof is where your light draws people's attention. That's the full proof of the ministry. Now, I'm sure there's some people out there that got some decent ministries. Unfortunately, the most of them are probably not in America anymore. Well, how can you say that? Because in America, we fit that pattern perfectly. I am rich and increased with goods and have need of nothing. We got all the answers. You want to find some people that are actually connected to God? Go over there to Garbage City. Go over there to China where somebody's life is on the line. You go over there and find somebody that's actually being persecuted. You find them, you're going to find somebody that's heart's connected back to God. They're dependent upon Him to keep them alive because their fellowship will get them killed. That's pretty bad stuff. Now, if you've got a flashlight in the dark, you're going to shine it on the object of your attention. If I had all of you with me at night and I was the only one with a flashlight, everybody in there, everybody around me would be looking wherever that light's at. Now, on rare occasions, I might be able to distract you, be distracted by you to say, hey, what's that over there? What's that up there in the tree, you know? And I might show it up there in the tree, or I might move it over there. But instantly, I'm bringing you right back to where my focus is, what I want to shine my light on. Now, every one of us has got a light. No question about it. The problem is, you know, where is it shining? What's it illuminating? Especially when it comes down to a spiritual thing. Now, let's apply this thing to the way Jesus intended it. So what are you talking about? Well, you realize Matthew 5 is the Sermon on the Mount. I mean, if you look at the Bible, you'll see that the first several verses in there are the Beatitudes. So I heard of them. What's a Beatitude? Well, that word simply means blessedness. You know what blessed means? Remember that? That's defined as happy. You say, God bless so-and-so. Make them happy. God bless my efforts. Make my efforts happy. Wait a minute. That ain't right, you know. If you're wanting God's blessing, you want Him to make you happy. Well, everything we do in an attempt to be happy. I don't care what it is. I mean, you may do the things that you don't like to do, but it beats the alternative. That's why you're doing it. Guy says, I got to go to work because I got to go to work. Well, it beats being broke. It beats sleeping out there in this kind of weather, you know. Except for Brother Mark. He might enjoy that. Anyway, it's consummate bliss. That's what it is. I mean, you get right down to the point where you're just absolutely overwhelmed with happiness to the point where you're just in the realm of bliss. And what are those Beatitudes? Well, he starts out and he says, blessed are the poor in spirit. Now, if somebody's got one of those virtues or one of these virtues, he's going to be a happier person than the rest of the people that don't have these virtues. You look around you. You know people that are miserable in life? You know some people that are just abnormally happy in life? I guarantee you, if you start looking at them, you're going to see that some of these virtues exist in some of these people that are happy. And the ones that are miserable, they're just the opposite. That's what's going on. I mean, when God says a certain thing is going to happen, it's going to happen. And you're not going to do anything to change it. He says, blessed is the poor in spirit. What's that? That's somebody with a humble spirit. A poor spirit is a humble spirit. Somebody says, you know, how you doing? How's your service for God doing? lousy, and I've never done anything for him worth counting. Like I told you about that little girl, you know, where they're taking that test, spiritual test, and you get a point for reading your Bible, a point for witnessing, a point for passing out track, a point for attending all the services, you know. The preacher writes his all up, and he's sitting by that girl, and he said, "Well, Ruthie, how many did you get?" "Well, I couldn't give myself anything." That is a humble spirit right there. Preacher had to look back at his and, "Man, oh man, I got to look my back over again." He said, "Pray for me, girl." That's a humble spirit. That's what he's talking about. Those people are happy. Why? Because God resisteth the proud and he giveth grace to the humble. You don't have any grace? You find yourself short-tempered, frustrated in life? Don't have any grace? Pride, man. It's your problem. They that mourn. What's that? How in the world can somebody, they that mourn, be happy? Because if you suffer with him, you'll reign with him. How about the fellowship of his sufferings? You get to know your Creator better. He begins to expose some things to you. One time I was praying. I mean, there's some crazy stuff. People say, "Don't ever pray for patience." Man, I prayed for patience for years. So you're more patient now? I must be. I've had enough trouble to be a little more patient now. Because you don't pray for that. Man, I pray for God's perfect will. He don't make mistakes. If all I got was relief, I wouldn't be worth shooting. How do I know that? Because God tells me that. You have need of patience. Tribulation worketh patience. So what he's saying is, you need a lot more trouble, son. Oh, thanks a lot. Let patience have her perfect work in you, that you may be perfect and entire, wanting nothing. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Who does that remind you of? I bet you don't remind you of yourself. I mean, you may think of somebody else, but most of us, the only one we can think of is Jesus Christ. That'd be about the only one. Anyway, what else? Blessed are the meek. Those are people that are under control. You think the guy out there that exhibits road rage is having a happier life? Guy cuts him off, you know, whoop in front of him. "Thank you, Lord, he missed me." Smile, wave. Enjoy yourself, man. What else? Blessed are they that hunger and thirst after righteousness. Have you ever really been hungry or thirsty? Really thirsty or really hungry? Have you ever been really sleepy, so sleepy you could not keep your eyes open and you couldn't go to sleep yet for some reason? Boy, doesn't that enhance it when you finally get there? No wonder he says, you know, blessed is the man that hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. I mean, they're going to get it, but every once in a while, God pours that stuff out. He says the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth. Man, when you get over into that realm, you begin to do the perfect will of God. He'll show you. He does some stuff. Anyway, what else? Blessed are the merciful. Why? For they shall receive mercy. We've all received less than our iniquities deserve. But how much more could you receive if you were more merciful yourself? I mean, somebody who is truly merciful is going to have the fruit of the Spirit. He's going to enjoy life a whole lot better. Things are going to bother him less. And he's going to be appreciative to the fact that God did not judge him for the stuff that he used to condemn in other people's lives. You get to the point as a Christian that you say, man, to their own master they stand or fall. I'm not going to judge that. I'm going to leave that thing alone, boy. Why? Well, that's because I'm not going to put myself in a position to think I'm better than they are and to make myself feel good by standing on them. So what's he say? He says, be a little more merciful. Somebody does something to you. Somebody does something bad to you, smacks you, turn the other cheek. Give them good something and render unto somebody good for evil. Man, that's real mercy. You get done with that. Do you realize that's what God does with you? What have you ever done good for God? Then he must be rendering good for evil. If there is none that doeth good. I think that's what he says. What else? Blessed are the pure in heart. What's that? God reveals himself more to them. Who? The pure in heart. Like who? Like Moses. Like David. Like Paul. You want to know more about God? He said, blessed are the pure in heart. Why? Because the more pure you are in heart, the more your desires are for your Creator. That's where you get right down to the bottom line. I mean, you may be a sinner. You may be the worst sinner you know. But God would rather have you as the worst sinner on this planet be absolutely overwhelmed and in love with Him than somebody over here knocking themselves out, doing the best they can, quit smoking, quit drinking, quit cussing in church every time the doors are open, doing everything they can to serve God. He'd rather have this one over here that loves Him than that one over there that's working themselves to death for Him. That's what He'd rather have. What else? Blessed are they that are persecuted for righteousness' sake. What's that have anything to do with? Well, it has to do with Philippians 3:10, the fellowship of His sufferings, and 1 Peter 2:20. What are those things? Well, that's where you're over there and you receive evil for doing good. You're persecuted for the right reasons because you've done nothing wrong, and you take that patiently. This is acceptable with God. And once again, the fruit of the Spirit, He just gives it to them. You want to know why those people are happier than the rest? Because God's given them some of the fruit of the Spirit. You say, what about the people that aren't saved? Blessed are those people. Happy are those people. You're not going to beat it with a beating machine. I don't care if they're lost or saved. It's just like that stuff that says, given it shall be given unto you, good measure pressed down, running over shall men given unto your bosom. You don't have to be saved for that to work. That stuff works. And if you're saved, so much the better. What else? Blessed are they that are reviled and persecuted falsely for Christ's sake. Paul and Silas in prison. I mean, really, you think those guys were faking it? Man, what are we going to do, Paul? Well, I'll tell you what we got to do, Silas. We've been out here preaching this stuff, and we don't want to make them think we're hypocrites, so we're going to just have to fake this thing until we make it. I'll tell you what, let's start singing some songs, you know, and make them at least think we're happy. That was not what was going on. Those guys were actually so happy, so blessed at that moment, that they began to sing out of the abundance of the heart. How'd they get that way in jail? Supernatural intervention. That's how they got there. Anyway, so the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, and every one of those things in the Beatitude, all eight of those things are connected directly back to that, and especially for Christians. Now, that was just a little old sidetrack thing, but when you find yourself in need of a little more love or joy or peace or gentleness or goodness or faith or meekness or temperance, and you need something more than you can create, then you're going to have to get it from God. And He says, I'll give it to you freely if you get over there into My desires and into My will. And if you exemplify some of those things in you, if you actually develop some of those virtues, if you actually try to have those things ministered to in your life and to be able to be edified in those areas, and instead of criticizing everybody else and griping and just being a greedy Christian that wants more and more and more, and basically, all I want from you, God, is all I can get. If you desire His perfect will, if you desire for Him to give you what He wants you to have, then things will start changing. And they'll start changing, and all of a sudden you'll start finding yourself, man, I'm probably the worst sinner I know, but boy, I've got more contentment now than I ever had. Is that because I have more than I've ever had? Nope. I've had a lot more than what I got right now. But the one thing that was missing with more stuff was contentment. And it seemed like the more I've gotten, the more I wanted. It's like, you know, it's just like it's just a magnet. You get this, and then you want that next one, and then you want the next one, and then you want the next one, and you want more of that. And it's just, it's like feeding, you know, trying to pound sand in a rat hole, boy, and stuff just sifting down through the hole, and you just keep putting more in it. It's like filling one of these sinkholes in Florida. At least it is for me. Well, let's get back to this light so shine before men. Now, let's look at it the way the Lord wants this thing to be seen. Look at verse 13 through 17 here, or 16. You're the salt of the earth, but if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is therefore good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. You ever heard that preached on? Are you Christians? You're supposed to go out there and make people thirsty for salvation and thirsty for God and thirsty to be in church. That's your job. You're supposed to add flavor to life, you know. You're supposed to show people that you got something that they don't have and they want it. Well, that's good preaching. But he didn't stop there. That part of this paragraph, the context here. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on the candlestick. And it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Then he says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. They don't go down to that last verse and begin to prove whether or not their efforts to get people to be more thirsty and hungry and so forth on a spiritual level result in the attention being drawn to God and in an effort to glorify Him, which is to praise God for His genius. Now, this light here he's talking about, these are not directional lights like a flashlight. These are like a candle or like a lantern and stuff, and they shine just about everywhere. Now, that thing is really an interesting concept. Because he says later on, let your light so shine that it illuminates the Father. That's what he's saying. But this light is shining almost everywhere all the way around. So what are you saying, God? I'm saying that that light's going to illuminate everything and it's where you draw their attention. You want that light to draw attention to yourself? You can do that. You want that light to draw attention to something you do so you can get credit for it so they'll pat you on the back? You can do that. What do you want? So, well, Lord, I just want you to get the credit for it. Oh, well, then that's good. But, you know, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Right? Brother Stratton, bless his sweet heart, you know, this guy is just such a calm, sweet person. He'll ask these Christians that come by his shop, he'll say, how are things over at your church? Why does he ask them that? Because he want to know what's in their heart. You want to know what's in somebody's heart? Just ask them about their church. Ask them about their family. Ask them about their job. Ask them what things in their life they've been doing lately that's interesting. They'll tell you what's in their heart because that's what they're going to tell you about. You just give them an open door and see which one, open doors and see which one they go through. You know how many of them say, man, God has sure done something for me. What's going on in your church? Man, last week, oh, we had such a blessing. The Lord was so real there. I was singing these songs and the tears down my eyes. I just had liberty. I hadn't felt that for a long time. You know how many people say that?
I have yet to have one tell me that.
They're not going to tell you that. Why? Because something's busted in the Laodicean church, man. That's why. It's busted. And it's not going to be fixed by opening up the book and start preaching. You need to work harder and you need to raise your standards. That's not going to fix it. If that attention's not where it belongs, everything goes wrong. Now, this thing's like a 10-year-old kid inviting friends over. So what's that? Kid goes to school, first week of school, you know, and he makes some new friends and they live close to him. He invites them over to the house. What do you think the kid's going to start doing and telling them? What do you think? Man, look at my PlayStation. Look at my four-wheeler out here. Look at my flat-screen TV in my own bedroom. Look at my cell phone. Look at how much bigger my bedroom is than yours. Look at how much bigger our house is than yours. Look at how much nicer our car is than yours. When they get to the point where they can't say anything else, my dad's tougher than your dad. What's going on? That's where the kid's attention is. The kid's attention is on getting that other kid to be impressed with himself. You know what he's using to do it? All of his parents' stuff. That's what he's doing. And that's a little kid. And we're God's children, but unfortunately, we're just like that. And when that little kid's trying to get the point across that everything I got's better than yours so that they'll think well of him, you're right back there to where the Pharisees and the Sadducees were, to be seen of men. That's what's going on. We all want to be somebody. That's the flesh. God says, without me, you can do nothing. That's why I said I resist the proud and giveth grace to the humble. It's no wonder that people are out there killing themselves on the roads, you know, with road rage, because they have no grace. My definition of grace still is the ability to tolerate the intolerable. How does God deal with you as a sinner? How does God, holy, have any fellowship with you whatsoever? His grace. How does he get you through the problems in life, things that you can't tolerate? He gives you grace. You supernaturally couldn't tolerate that in the flesh, but he'll fix it where you can. Now, that's what's going on. Now, their attention, the attention is to draw everybody else's attention to themselves. That's where they're shining their light. We'll get into this a little bit more next week, but where do you think they draw the attention in these other churches? Where do you think down here at East Brent Baptist Church they draw your attention? I'm not talking about, you know, some crazy philosophy. I'm not talking about doctrine here. I'm talking about the reality in life. Comparing what God says and what should be going on as a Christian and in these churches to what's actually going on. Where are they going to draw your attention at First Baptist?
How great our church is.
Where are they going to draw your attention down here at, you know, Pensacola Christian? I mean, there's some of them going to draw your attention to the pastor. Some of them going to draw their attention, you know, to the ministry they're involved in. Some of them going to be, man, we got this great youth department, boy. We got this contemporary services. You ought to hear some of the music these guys play, boy. You ought to see how much money we give to missions. I will not give my glory to another. Don't you realize how far away from that they may glorify your Father, which is in heaven, all of this stuff is? Can't you see how clear that is? That everything is so messed up and the attention for so long has been drawn to self and what we're doing and how we feel about ourselves and why we feel good about ourselves. And a sales pitch gets you to do what? Come help us, just like Martha. Just exactly like Martha. It's not about God. Why isn't it about God? Because in the last days, men shall be lovers in their own selves. If you're going to beat that, you're going to have some supernatural help to beat that right there. Let's close in prayer. Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for loving us. Thank you again for your mercy and your patience. Lord, it's absolutely mind-boggling to me how in the world...